Hate to drop you in it, newsman, but this week you have fallen foul of a scary health warning.
I think I know where you're going with this, web guy, and thank you. Thank you for dropping me in it. I've gone, what is it? Straight from the fire into the frying pan, I think.
Yeah. Nice analogy, because what we're talking about is sausages.
Yes.
Report from the George Institute of Global Health this week tells us that two things. One, your humble snag is, you know, terrifyingly bad for your health.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, Aussies are eating a ton load of these. 1.1 billion sausages per year eaten by Australians.
That's a lot of salt. That's a lot of sausage.
It is.
Sausage party.
Sausage fest.
Sausage fest.
So the research shows us that the average barbecued sausage contains more than half of a person's average daily intake, especially when you add in the bread and the sauce that people usually have to go along with it. Also, worryingly, Australian adults are already consuming double the daily recommended amount of salt. So already eating lots of salt, eating more than a billion sausages, and then it turns out they are overloaded with salt as well. All this means we're increasing the risk of high blood pressure, heart attack, kidney disease, and stroke. So, you know, all the fun stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing. I love a good sausage.
Well, everyone does.
Yeah, there seems to be a bit of shame about eating sausages. Like, if you go to a fancy barbecue, people are a bit reluctant to just serve up snags.
But you must be going to way fancier barbecues than me.
But, yeah, I must admit, and I think this is where you were alluding in your intro, is that my two young daughters starting to get into food. They were previously, obviously, too young to get their hands on it, and they're just into that stage of experimenting with food. And sausages is a big hit with the girls.
Mm. Well, they are Australian.
That's it.
So they do love the snags.
But now I'll be watching them. Tonight, in fact, I think sausages are on the menu. And I'll be watching them as their little faces light up with delight. And it's because they're getting probably their weekly intake of salt.
It's not all bad news, though, and I don't know whether this will make you feel better, but apparently they also actually named and shamed, like, the worst performing sausages because, you know, different brands of sausages have different ingredients.
Well, this is where I think it gets worse. But
oh, okay.
Go on.
All right. Coles stocked four out of the five worst performing sausages for highest salt content. Aldi had one in the top five. So I guess the thing is, you know, only eat sausages in moderation. Don't have them all the time. And when you get them, maybe go to a butcher, get some, like, really good quality ones. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can even point in the direction.
I think that'll be my plan for the future. I must admit, in previous times, I have bought sausages. And I'm sure there were low-salt sausages in Coles.
Low salt?
But maybe they were low fat. But I think they were low salt.
Well, ideally you want low salt and low fat.
Mm. But they're no longer on sale. I've checked.
Okay. I wish I had done this sum before we started speaking, but say there's 24 million people in Australia, 1.1 billion sausages being eaten. How many are we all eating each a year?
No.
That's a lot.
We'll crack the number. Crunch the numbers later, but
yeah,
that's a lot. Yeah, how many sausages would be seen at Web Guy's house in a given month?
Oh, yeah, not many in a month. I mean, we just went past Sausage Sizzle the other day.
Yes.
But yeah, like one. We eat one if we ate a sausage each in a month.
Right.
One a month, maybe that would be Maybe not even that.
Yeah.
But then every now and then we fire up the barbecue. Anytime we do the barbecue,
yes,
it's going to be sausage on there. But we do try and get good ones, like good quality.
Mm.
But I don't know if that includes the salt. Certainly sort of like a leaner option. But salt, I don't know. I don't know where we sit on that.
It's funny though. They pick on the humble sausage. But I guess if you went through a lot of different foods, there'd be plenty of foods that just don't stack up nutritionally.
Like the, I see Krispy Kreme is selling a new donut, which is actually filled with Nutella. So you've got like a donut shell with Nutella pumped into the middle of it. That's probably not going to do your body any favours.
No, there's plenty of foods that are terrible. I actually, when this story came up, it sounded familiar to me. And I haven't gone back to look, but I definitely put a Facebook post, I reckon 3 or 4 years ago, where I put up a picture of sausages and said, "Oh, I'm giving up. I've got a packet a day habit, and I'm giving them up because mm-hmm. I think there was a story saying they're almost as unhealthy as smoking."
For some reason, I had this mental image of you actually smoking the sausages.
Well, that was the whole sort of trying to be funny, you know.
Because they so it could be like a cigar. Just clip the end off the sausage, light it up.
Yep. So I apologise if my girls ever listen to this out of the archives in 15 years and they have health problems. I'm sorry, girls. I've been feeding you deadly sausages. I'm not salty about it at all.
News story that's just been in the background for a little while, Newsman. And then this week it's gone into another gear. We are finding out about this conversation the Stefanovic brothers had in the back of an Uber.
So that's Carl and Peter?
Carl and Peter Stefanovic.
Carl, the morning show host, and Peter, he's involved with 60 Minutes at the moment, I believe.
60 Minutes, and I think he does Weekend Today, and yeah, the Today Show.
Quite a powerful brother combination. When it comes to media, there probably hasn't been such a pairing. But
no.
Things have come a little bit unstuck for the pair.
Yeah, so they were basically talking. Peter and his wife, who also works at Channel 9, Sylvia Jeffries, sitting in the back of an Uber, talking to Carl, who was somewhere else, talking on his phone, and just bad-mouthing everybody they know and work with, essentially. A few problems there. One is why was the call recorded?
Yes.
This Uber driver has essentially sold the story of what they were all talking about to the New Idea magazine. And as I said, it's been going on for a little while, and now it's all, I guess the article has come out, or it's about to come out. Anyway, all of a sudden, the Uber driver is now saying he didn't record the call, he just remembered the details, because recording the call and selling that would be illegal.
So he's remembered it word by word, every single blow.
Photographically. And it's immediately legitimate because the brothers have basically apologised for what they said. So they've admitted, we said this stuff. Weird that they would be having such a, brutal conversation out loud in public on speakerphone. But then as I think about it, well, if it was Peter and his wife, maybe they were both wanting to talk. I don't know. You do a conference call, but in the back of a public, back of an Uber, that's a public space, really.
I guess a couple of drinks, you can lose your good judgment on a topic like that. It's probably one for a backyard barbecue where everyone you're with can be trusted if you're going to have a little bit of a whinge about work.
But have you ever done that? Have you ever sat in the back of an Uber and speakerphone called someone and just whinged?
No, I don't think so. But I think I have been in the back of a taxi. I'm from the generation that still catches these things called taxis. And I know people that are very comfortable having speakerphone conversations. Yeah. Not something I do.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like the wisest move. I would think they just dropped the guard. Dropped the guard, thought, I guess some people see the driver as pretty invisible. You do your job, you're driving along, possibly not listening.
I doubt anyone else will be doing it anytime soon.
No.
Carl has just laid into his new co-host on today's show, Georgie Gardner. He's said that she he said that she does not have enough opinions. He's accused her of sitting on the fence, quote unquote.
Fence sitter.
She needs to step up if she wants to stay on the show, he said.
Well, yeah, okay.
So how does that make... Then after this all goes public, he has to turn up to work the next day and sit alongside her. That's awkward, isn't it?
Yeah, but depends how upfront he is about his criticism generally. Like, perhaps he's already had a conversation with her and said, hey, I reckon you should have a bit more of a go and form an opinion. But doesn't sound like it, given he backpedaled quite a bit, didn't he, on that one?
He did. And I don't know... Maybe I'd be proven wrong, but interesting to mark down today on the calendar and then check the next ratings period. This has got to give them a bump. This will help their ratings for sure because, you know, this is like front page scandal. What show are you going to tune into to watch the host interact? It's going to be the one where all this, you know, all this schmozzle is happening.
We love great byplay between two hosts, but we love even more when we sense there could be a little... tension after an event. So you're right. I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, next time I've got a few minutes in the morning, I will be tuning into their show to see what the dynamics are like. Because to be honest, I haven't seen that changeover since Lisa Wilkinson left the show. But they all seem pretty tight on Channel 9. But
he also had a dig at Richard Wilkins.
Oh, Dickie.
Said something like, he keeps his entertainment contacts close to his chest. Well, you know, that's probably fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that what... That's why he...
That's why he's in the entertainment report. Yeah.
Otherwise, he have no place.
Yes.
He'd just be an old guy that really should brush his hair out.
Smartest man in the world died the other day, Marcus.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Professor Stephen Hawking.
Mm. The man with probably best known... Obviously super smart, but, you know, confined to a wheelchair because of motor neurone disease. And, of course, that robotic-sounding communication voice that he used to communicate with the rest of the world.
Yes. Had a lot of famous, you know, theories. Mm. You know, like he's a physicist. Wrote a...
Did you soak them all in? I found them all a bit big for my little brain.
I read one of his books.
Oh,
he had this
web guy.
His most famous book was called A Brief History of Time, I think it was. I've got it. I read
How
it.
Did you go?
I read it years ago and, you know, not much of it has stuck with me.
Mm.
But the thing about it was he did write it in a very, you know, pretty accessible way.
Good. So, like, you read it and it wasn't trudgery. It wasn't...
No. So, and actually after he died, I thought, I should just flick back through that again.
Mm.
You know, amazing brain. What we now find out is that just in the days before he died, he published or he, you know, finished, added the finishing touches, it hasn't actually been published yet, put the finishing touches on a final paper. You know, that's what these science guys do, they write papers. Mm. And
pretty archaic, writing a paper.
Yeah, I know.
Call it something else.
They should be uploading files.
Doesn't have the same... authority, does it?
No.
At the end I've of delivered the day, a upload yeah. of world significance. Sorry.
At the end of the day, we still like that piece of paper.
Mm.
Now, here's the headline that caught my eye. Stephen Hawking's final paper predicted the end of the world and revealed a parallel universe.
Mm. Some of my favourite plot lines for a movie, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what a appealing headline.
Mm.
I clicked on it. And I've got to admit, bit of a letdown.
Ah.
The story doesn't quite deliver on what the headline promised. But he was working on this paper, co-authored it with another science guy. Did the last edit on it just days before he died. Now, one of his early ideas, theories, was this thing of the multiverse. You know, our cosmos is only one of many universes.
Mm-hmm.
And in this final paper, he has laid out a bit of a, you know, idea about how we might go about discovering these other universes. Which sounds good. Let's do that. Yep. Let's do that. Let's get out of there, guys. He says, it sets out the maths needed for a space probe to find experimental evidence of the existence of one of these, of this multiverse. So what does that mean? Well, over to you now, newsman.
You're the one that's read his book. I just know very little about that.
I think the idea with these things is it's all theoretical. But, you know, it starts in theory and then, you know, hopefully, you know, other people take up the work and, you know, bit by bit, they maybe get closer to discovering this stuff in real life, blah, blah, blah. What was the other interesting thing? He also has predicted the end of the world. This is the bit that left me feeling a little flat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he has tipped that the world will end. The universe, actually, sorry, my mistake, tipped the universe will end. When the sun runs out of energy. So, I don't know. Is that groundbreaking? I don't know.
I don't know.
Now, you might be wondering, well, when's that going to happen? When do you reckon?
Yeah, well, I'd say another 500,000 years. Just to pluck a...
Okay. Well, the sun...
Pluck a number.
The sun the size of ours, expected to last for 8 billion years.
Mm.
It's currently been burning for 4.5 billion. So it's just over halfway gone.
Oh, no.
So we've still got another almost 4 billion years left.
Seize the moment. We've only got that much time.
Seize the day. We only have, what's 4 billion times 365? That's only how many days we have left.
Oh, gee.
Everybody. And I'm talking to, you know, human civilization as a collective. But we'll actually be gone well before then. Apparently, the Earth will begin boiling our oceans in a billion years.
Ooh.
So, I don't know. That's not well, cheery.
I always, regardless if, you know, it was a bit of a letdown for you, but regardless of that, I always find it interesting to get, whether it's a movie star producing a film after their passing, like they feature in the film.
Yeah.
Or these comments from him from the grave, basically.
Oh,
I always find that a little bit more juicy.
Oh, maybe it's a tactic these days because I think almost the day after David Bowie died, his new album was released.
Yes.
Like the day after.
So you reckon they just hold back?
Yeah, you have it in the can ready to go. And then, you know, obviously he knew he was, you know, on borrowed time. Stephen Hawking, I guess, knew that he was.
So do you think he would have asked for it to be released a bit later or?
Oh, far be it for me to question the motives of Stephen Hawking, but who knows? It does give the whole thing a lot more publicity, like you say. Everyone's a lot more interested in it.
Now,
and it also happened with the Cranberries lead singer died recently.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, sales of their music were up like thousands and thousands of percent.
So, yeah, maybe opportunist Stephen Hawking.
Sorry, I interrupted that. You were about to...
Oh, an interesting story we both would have heard... the day after his passing, a local interview about an academic, Australian academic that worked with Stephen Hawking.
Oh, yeah.
And almost ran him over in the car park at a university.
Really?
Yeah. So he had a chat to people that we work with for a interesting radio interview. So talk about alternative universes.
Mm.
If this academic had run over Stephen Hawking, what would the world have missed out on?
Talk about, you know, just ruining your career. Imagine if you were the guy who ran over Stephen Hawking. Apparently, there were stories coming out about him that he had a as they say, a wicked sense of humour. I wish I had read the stories closer now, but there was something about, I think he pretended to die or something in the middle of a lecture. So he would, like, prank people.
Oh, gee. And you can't really, I mean, how would you handle that? Because there's a few times you look at him and he's gone, he's very still.
Yeah.
There's no movement. So it wouldn't take much to fake fake being dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not go there.
No. So, you know, he lived a good life and a lot longer than he was expected to as well. So rest in peace, Stephen Hawking.
Web Guy, I recently read an article online about airports across the world, a bit of a rating list, one of our favourites. We like to compare things, and that's something we do well on this podcast, I think, Tim. It looked at all over the world. Now, where we are, Adelaide Airport slipped a few places on the ladder and is considered the worst airport in Australia.
Slipped a few. We plummeted to rock bottom. This is a dark day in the state's history.
I guess it's not overly important what this list is about, but I don't think there's any problems with Adelaide Airport. What would be the issues that people have with it?
Oh, too spacious.
Too spacious.
Honestly, we should have checked what the criteria were, but Adelaide Airport, if you want an airport where you can just get in, get out, get through without any hassle, you know, and it feels, you know, like there's plenty of room.
Yeah.
It is wide open spaces in there. I don't know, I reckon it's pretty great. Maybe it's got something to do with, we feel like we've got a new airport. Hey, we upgraded our airport, we built a new one.
Yeah.
But that was probably like, that was more than 10 years ago now.
Yeah, I'd say at least. My experience has always been positive there. Generally, it's more me dropping people off than actually going anywhere. So I've had positive experiences pulling in and just dropping off.
Great car park.
And also when I've attended media conferences and other things at the airport, getting into that car park, the multi-story car park,
Yeah.
Fine.
So have you actually been inside the airport?
Yeah, occasionally. I rarely get past the actual check gate. So I'm normally waving off people and saying, enjoy your holiday.
I know for a fact there's a small little kids' playground in there.
Oh.
That's a hit. No one's surveying the kids, I'm guessing, because I think that'll be ranking Adelaide number one.
Now, I don't think we're at the bottom of this worldwide list for airports, but there is still the memory of the previous airport. Are you old enough to have memories of the shed that was Adelaide's International Airport?
Oh, I had certainly been there, but it's very hard to recall. Very hard to remember what it was like at all.
It was very basic, one multi-story and just so bland looking. Yeah. Design was not one of its strengths.
Yeah.
The other thing with this article is I think a pleasant airport is important. I don't know, my limited overseas travel, when you have a layover or stopover for several hours, you want to feel comfortable. You want to feel happy where you are at.
I think the best airport in the world was Singapore, Changi Airport in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what they're doing. I have been to Singapore Airport. I don't know if it was that one, but I have been there a long time ago, but I don't remember it being, you know, it wasn't like some kind of mythical paradise.
The few things I remember of, I believe it was that airport, was it had a cinema. So it was, they called it a cinema, but basically you...
TV screen.
A partitioned area where you went off and sat in comfortable chairs. But it was dark, so it had that cinema feel.
Yeah.
It also had a quiz show that you could take part in.
Oh,
so you all sat there and there was a cheesy host going, pick, and it would come up with, pick what number this weird statistic is, and you're punched in a thing on the on the console.
Sounds exactly like what you don't want in an airport.
Well, I guess they were the options for people that were just bored out of their brain to do those sort of things.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
But you do spend a lot of time in airports. It's a lot of waiting. It's a lot of frustrating wait because you have to, they want you there early. And so you're just sitting there, you're reading magazines. Well, what's your way to pass times in an airport?
Yeah, reading's the big one. If I'm on my own, I don't travel much either, but whenever I have, reading's the one. But the other thing I quickly want to mention is we're now the worst ranked sort of major Australian airport. Overtaken by everyone, including Gold Coast. So Gold Coast is, I don't know what the population is, but like the Gold Coast, it feels like, you know, it's, I remember when it wasn't even a city. It was just like this little regional holiday spot.
Yep.
And they are thrashing us at everything. It's like Queensland can now submit two cities that are way more important than SA's first one.
I reckon North Queensland's pretty cool as well, so...
Maybe that's going to be the next one.
Oh, well.
Maybe Cairns, maybe, can we somehow work it so that Cairns is the capital of South Australia?
Yeah.
Just trying to think, you know, out of the box here. Let's do a deal where we subcontract our our capital city to Queensland. They can give us their third best and we'll take it.
Perhaps with the rating of the airports, they were a little bit swayed by the experience of being, like, if you're at the Gold Coast, exciting things are happening ahead
or
people are in a holiday mood. Less people, I'd say, are coming to Adelaide pumped up for a big summer holiday.
Yeah, they hand you the survey when you arrive at Gold Coast. Like, feeling good, feeling great.
Yep.
Hand it to you when you arrive at Adelaide.
Probably 50% of people coming back from business or coming back from a holiday.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm no authority, but I love Adelaide Airport.
Yeah, very pleasant, very user-friendly. And from all reports, once you get past those gates, you get to catch planes.